Good afternoon, Flashback Twin Cities, on KLBB Club 1220. Tom Ozen here with you for the next hour, and also our good friend Tom Hsu.
Good morning.
How's it going over there?
Oh, afternoon, I suppose. I'm still stuck in our earlier time period.
Yeah, well, you have to get those cue cards adjusted over there.
Never.
And, you know, we don't really do a weather report here in the show, but I guess we're Minnesotans, so we have to mention the weather every single Saturday. It is a beautiful day for October. The sun's out there, and it's a crisp, cool breeze.
Mm-hmm.
But
get a little spattering of rain on my car as I was coming in.
You know,
just a little bit.
With the 1 o'clock time slot and getting guests to come in, I've been selling a great day to come to Stillwater, a Saturday afternoon, have lunch, walk around. It's sunny and beautiful and warm. I'm not really meeting my sell. It's coming up a little short. Our guest last week, we were corresponding via email, and he said jokingly, "I'll come unless it snows." If you recall, on Friday we had that blizzard right before Saturday.
And yep.
We were going to have to improvise the show, which would have been fun. We could have done some different voices.
We could just make up voices the whole time. I'd be down for that. That's my kind of thing.
It may come to that at some point. So talking to Bob DeForest, did you meet Bob when he was in here?
Yeah. Super nice guy.
Stan's guest. Bob is a collector of all things film, and I'm so happy to have met him today. I was doing some research, and as you know, here at Flashback Twin Cities, we preserve all things media and film, tapes, photos from the Twin Cities. Do you remember the DuMont Network, Tom?
Actually, I do.
You do? Mm-hmm. What's the DuMont Network?
I couldn't tell you right now, but I've heard of it.
Okay. Well, DuMont was what we maybe would consider the Fox Network of the 1950s. Now, not because they aired The Simpsons, but they were the fourth network. Probably the second network of TV distribution to NBC. So DuMont was on for about 10 years, about 1946 to 1956, and produced more than 20,000 TV episodes from the decade of 46 to 56. Mm. All those shows were created prior to the launch of Ampex's electronic videotape, which means every show was done live.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, it's live, and then when you watch it in California, Los Angeles, it's on a rerun, so more or less, or 2 hours later, of a film kinescope. So if you're living in Los Angeles, every TV show you watch at that point was on a kinescope, which was a fuzzier version of the live broadcast. And if you watch, like, old Honeymooners, you see what a kinescope looks like, because it looks like you took a videotape of a TV. So it's a little
fuzzy. Sure,
little
so it's
fuzzy.
Like twice as bad as what you would normally get, something like that.
So the DuMont Network, they had a lot of challenges, and we'll discuss that in a different show, but they went out of business, closed, and the film library, more appropriately just call it, ended up in the hands of ABC for whatever reason. And it was reported, this was testified to the National Preservation Board of Film, Radio, and Television in 1996. 20,000 episodes on kinescopes were put into trucks and dumped into New York's East River in the early 70s. An entire film library because ABC, but I talked to Bob, our friend Bob DeForest, and he also heard the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that virtually all of Jackie Gleason's early Honeymoon sketches are now sitting at the bottom of the East River, New York. It might take a while to dry those out if we take a scuba diving trip to get those. But imagine this entire – first of all, this is a little bit before the environmental era, so I think that people must have thought that this is a great way to
clean
up
film and just throw it in the river. Why not?
You know, not even the garbage at the landfill. Just throw it in the river.
You know, yeah, they should have brought it out to where they have the E.T. video game buried over in Death Valley.
And if you don't catch the reference, Atari produced too many E.T. video games, which were just terrible, and they ended
horrible.
Up in a landfill in California. It's they decided, this is a...
Millions of cartridges.
A verified story.
Are buried. And so they basically just, you know, went ahead. So they did this way back then, and they did it in the 80s.
Oh. Other kinescopes were put through a silver reclaiming process because of the microscopic amounts of silver.
Hmm.
So... You know, today, if you see a house that you want to get some copper or silver out of, you go in and take it. In the early 70s, you saw some kinescopes. You had to scrape the silver on it. So goodbye, Captain Video, and goodbye, Jackie Gleason. And what's left over, let's put into the river. ABC wanted room for their recent vintage videotapes in the warehouse.
You know, I'm sure they could have afforded another warehouse. I'm sure they could have.
So when people ask me, you know, why do you do this website and why do you have 17 boxes of tapes in your basement right now? There's a reason for this. We need to – it's important to look forward, but you got to look backward a little bit too. You got to look backward, and there's so much great history in this. I post videos online at tcmedianow.com. I'll plug that every so often today. Let's say you might have been on the news 25 years ago. There was a bad storm, or you were featured in one of those Before We Go segments, and that tape might not have ever been seen again. But I'm meeting people through the website and through the Facebook page, TC Media Now, that have seen themselves on the news again 30 years after they were on there and didn't have a VCR to tape it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why I do it. And besides, there's a lot of great history that's getting thrown away. I think that people think that if you can't play something because you don't have a film projector, a slide projector, or a video machine, that it's worthless. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case yet. There's still a lot of machines out there. They're becoming scarce, but don't throw that away. It's great history. Even if you don't want it, talk to other people.
Someone will. I mean, at some point in everybody's life, they look back at all the nostalgic things mm-hmm. that they loved before, and they try to bring those back into right. their lives again. Like my dad's now watching all the shows when he was a kid. He's 64.
Right.
He's watching all the cowboy shows that didn't exist for 40 years.
Well, I was talking to Bob a little bit, and Bob was asking me, do you like MeTV? And I said, I love MeTV. The best part is these shows, which we watched on UHF TV.
Is that what Nick at Night was?
Well, MeTV is an antenna service because now we have so many more digital TV channels now. We can have channel 5.1, channel 5.2.
Yeah, yeah.
And MeTV, they air the same kind of programming that Nick at Night aired or even channel 9 aired when we were young.
Mm-hmm.
But the best part is because when we were watching those, we're watching them analog TV through an antenna and watching UHF TV. So if you're watching Bonanza or Dragnet, you're watching it more than likely through a fuzzy UHF picture.
Mm-hmm.
And the film was not cleaned. It was probably gone from box to station. But the best part now in the digital era is we can clean that film. You can watch it. I'm watching Bonanza right now, and I caught a little bit of Bonanza and Dragnet. That's how I prep for the show. I watch shows I saw 30 years ago.
That's how you prep.
That's
how you live.
It's how I prep the show. the living part, it's a different story. But it looks great. And a couple of people who are MeTV fans have been commenting on how great it looks. And, you know, again, don't throw things away. Do not – Mississippi is a great river. Do not throw your family slides in the Mississippi River.
It doesn't need any more family slides in that river.
No. We have a great guest today. We have Joan Steffend with us today. I'm very excited to have Joan Steffend on because we are actually reunited after 21 years, and I'm going to explain that story and tell Joan the best line she had that stuck with me for 20-some years about Joan, and I'm going to reveal this line after this break on Flashback Twin Cities on KLEB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities on KLEB. Tom Osmond here, and welcoming my very special guest, Joan Steffend.
Very special.
Very special
wow.
guest. Welcome.
Thank you. It's
That's
nice
a compliment.
To be here. I know. I got a very.
And the drive was okay today?
It's a little crazy out there. I mean, I was driving from South Minneapolis, basically, mm-hmm. and I thought, I'll avoid the 35W94 snafu.
Sure, sure.
And so did everybody else. So it was a parking lot on 494.
You know, the sun is out, and people are trying to get outside. It's a rarity to see the sun here on a Saturday.
I know. But we do have 45-mile-an-hour winds to kind of offset that sun. So it's great.
It keeps us humble. We don't want to get too confident. Okay, so I'm going to reveal the big Joan message, which has stuck with me for 21 years.
I cannot wait to hear what I thought was important 21
let's,
years
Let's
ago.
Flash back. I was, I will say I was in school. I'm not going to say how old I was.
Oh,
I was in school.
He was like 7.
Well, not quite, but about 1991, 92. Uh-huh. And it was our journalism unit, our TV unit, and Joan Steffend was our guest speaker. And imagine a group of 12-year-olds, okay? And we're talking to this woman on TV.
This is a bad start. Imagine a group of 12-year-olds.
And I have to admit, I wasn't any different then than I am now, so I'm way ahead. I'm keeping track of all these things going on in the media that the other kids are not paying attention to. So Joan says that she had a tough time getting into TV because her voice was too
Yes, soothing.
Well, that wasn't the word she used.
Okay.
She used the word.
Oh, yes.
She used the word, my voice is too sexy to be on TV.
No, they called it a bedroom voice is what they called it. I would never have used the word sexy.
You said that to 12-year-old? Oh, no.
Well.
Yes, WCCO told me that my voice was a bedroom voice. It would put people to sleep.
I'm remembering the word differently, but but being your guest, you drove a long ways here, I'm just saying, but Joan, I listened to you from that point forward, I thought, her voice is very, we'll say soothing.
Soothing.
I want to make sure the audience is happy here.
He's nodding off right now.
Yeah, it's very soothing, but.
That was so frustrating to me, though, because I had dreamed of working at WCCO television, and I was working up in Duluth at the time, and I came down, and I had my audition tape, and I sat in front of Reed Johnson, maybe, was the news director at the time, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, "We can't hire you here. You'll put people to sleep with that voice." So my gosh.
So you took that tape, and then you went over to Golden Valley.
I did.
And
was hired within a week or two.
Well,
Channel 11.
Let's talk about Channel 11 in 1982.
Okay. 1982.
Mm-hmm. And Channel 11 in 1982 was not exactly your powerhouse news station.
Oh, no, 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 not at all. In fact, it was WTCN at the time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like I was going to WCCO. I mean, that had a history, and KSDP was faltering at that time, but it still had a history. And the history of WTCN was kind of like Mel Jazz and the matinee movie, and you know, it really wasn't about news. But as luck would have it, Gannett came in and bought it about a year maybe after I worked there.
Well, they were trying to make it about news, and they went through about 7 different anchors in a year, and what
John Bachman,
great guy.
Awesome.
We have a library of John Bachman on tcmedianow.com. We did an interview with him actually last fall before he retired. He's
a cool guy,
great guy. So, what was your original role? So, did you go there to be an anchor?
No, I did not. I wanted to be, but they. No, am I lying to you?
I don't think I'm lying
because
to you.
I think I started as a reporter, and then they moved me into the anchor position really shortly after I got there.
Were you doing weekends?
I was doing weekends. I was glued to the weekend anchor chair for 17 years, so except when they let me off to go anchor with majors, you know, when everybody else would take time off.
Right.
But I did start as a reporter, and then very shortly I moved into the anchor chair. I was so grateful for that.
And you went to school originally to be an actress. You wanted to be a Hollywood star.
I wanted to be Carol Burnett, to be perfectly clear. I wanted to be Carol Burnett. I wanted to do sketch comedy. I wanted to make people laugh. I wanted to have fun. I didn't necessarily want to be a star because that didn't appeal to me, but I wanted to do that. But Carol Burnett was already taken, dang it.
Well, the challenge is, you know, Vicki Lawrence wrote her letter and said she wanted to be her. And look how that worked out for her.
And that was too late for me as well. I was thinking I could make a great Vicki Lawrence, but no. So I went out and studied at Warner Brothers Film Actors Workshop for a while, and they soon discovered that I was not tall and blonde and thin and high-cheekboned, and, you know, I left after about 6 months.
Did you do any movies, cameos, walk-ons at all?
No, I couldn't even get a game show. I really wanted a game show just to support myself out there. I got nothing, which just, to me, means that I wasn't meant to be out there.
So you came back to Minneapolis with you know, were you discouraged, were you distraught, or did you thought, okay, if I can't play in the movies, I'll be on TV, but I'll play a news reporter or a news anchor, because you didn't go the traditional journalism route.
No, I didn't. Thank you for noticing. I'm absolutely good with that. I don't have a college degree, and I'm absolutely good with that. I learned so much on the job. I came back and I went to Brown Institute, and
brownies.
Tom's giving his thumbs up here.
Oh, here's the part that's going to frustrate you though. I started, and I think it was maybe 6 weeks later they had started me in the second quadrant, and then they moved me on to the fourth, and then I got a job up in Duluth, and they went, fine, you graduated. So I was only there for like 6 weeks before they allowed me to graduate, because I got a job up in Duluth on television.
Well, that took out their work away from them, because they're supposed to place you, and I'm guessing that in 19... 19- 99 when you graduated, that, that was what they, that was still their goal to do that.
And yeah. So it was just kind of a crazy thing where I ended up going up to Duluth, actually on my now ex-husband's interview. He was going up to interview for a job on this radio, this TV station, KBJR, Superior Television, for the Port Cities. And I just kind of raised my hand and said, may I audition as well? And they said, yeah, but there's no place for women in television. So, you know, one of those kind of, yeah, I know, I know. He, the guy who was the news director at the time was very old school, but he allowed me to, he gave me a script and sat me in front of a television camera and allowed me to act like a news anchor. I acted like Ron Majors. That was my goal. And they hired both of us.
Where's that video?
I would love to know where that video is. I have no idea. But that was crazy time. You ran your own teleprompter and everything up in Duluth. That was
give
nuts.
Me a challenge. We're going to find the video. Oh, give me a challenge.
Oh, yeah. It's KBJR probably would have it if anybody
Someone
would.
Has it in a box somewhere, in a banker's box in an office.
Right.
So Duluth, now Duluth is a great hopping city, but the challenge of Duluth is once the summer ends, then it's fall and winter in Duluth, and if you're not in college, it's not as fun as living in Minneapolis in the winter.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that when you work in Duluth television, you make, well, at least at that point, I was their main anchor, their main female anchor, ultimately, and I was making $600 a month. And so the challenge is to enjoy Duluth on $600 a month when you're covered with snow and ice and, you know, you need to make car payments. And
that barely covers two nights of grandma's on the pier.
I know, right? I know the times have changed, but I never cracked I never cracked five figures up in Duluth.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you came to, you brought your tapes with you and you brought your energy with you, and maybe it's best Channel 4 didn't take you on, because if you think about it, the opportunities at Channel 4 would have been much more competitive and much more edgier, and maybe a little bit more, well, you don't have a college degree, you're a brown person from Duluth.
Right, right, right. I mean, I landed exactly where I was supposed to land. I have no question about that. And I loved being there when you saw everything change. I mean, you saw Gannett come in and pour all this money into it, and for all of the flack that we took about being the Care Bears and stuff, that really suited my personality a whole lot more, because I am not this hardcore, edgy, you know, eyewitness, got to get the blood and guts kind of a reporter. So it really fit me a lot.
Well, we do live in Minnesota, and Minnesota's, you know, we do like that. And it obviously, Channel 11 was onto something, because every other station tried to do that. Mm-hmm. They tried to do the team spirit that we're the hometown team.
Yeah.
A few slogans that have from the rival stations that they tried doing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I watched tons of this video, and you see everyone tried to get a little softer when Care 11 came on, and everyone was smiling and having a good time. And, and a lot of what Channel 11 did is they hired a lot of beautiful-looking people.
Mm-hmm.
And
although that was problematic with me, because, I mean, seriously, but The Voice messed me up over at WCCO, and we had a news director at Channel 11 that was constantly reinforcing the idea that my face did not belong on television. And it was I mean, because he was very much about the pretty people.
Mm-hmm.
And with me, it was kind of like, I don't know what to do with her. I mean, the ratings are really good, but we don't really, you know, I mean, he'd come up to me and he'd go, you know, we need to do something about your hair. People with red hair shouldn't be on television. It's too distracting. You know, you could be Lucille Ball or Carol Burnett, but you can't be a news anchor with red hair. So he kept telling me I needed to be a brunette. I needed to be a blonde. I was basically lucky that I had my job. But the fact is, we went to number one on the weekends before anybody else did, so he didn't know what to do with that information other than keep telling me to go blonde.
Well, it worked, and you probably have a record for being the same constant presence on the weekend anchor chair in this town. I think that, I'm trying to think of a couple others. Mike Welcher might be the only other one that might have done weekends as long as you.
Maybe. Yeah, it was 17 years. Then I quit for a while, and they lured me back in for about 6 months.
Let's take a little flashback. Let's hear our guest today, Joan Steffen, and talking about these great days at Channel 11. Let's listen to... Okay, it's a little intro here. I might have got a commercial clip on this also. But let's flash back to 88 and...
88. Oh, my gosh.
This is very soothing.
I know. I'm doing yoga in here while...
Twin Cities' most watched newscast, News 11, with Joan Steffen, Kevin McDowell, Randy Shaver on sports, and meteorologist Dennis Belkin.
We know what matters. That, remember that?
That's right. For kids' sake, we know what matters.
Wow. I mean, I really started to get charged up. Like, I don't know what I'm even going to say. Good evening, everybody. Topping tonight's
most watched newscast.
Yeah. That was really an honor. I mean, I grew up in this area, so it was really an honor to be part of that team.
And looked like fun.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. It was a lot of fun. I mean, Kevin McDowell became just a great, great friend. And he was my youngest daughter's godfather.
Oh, wow.
So you become like family. You know, the weather people kept floating in and out. So they would be kind of like the family member that would come and go. It's like they show up at, you know, every once in a while at a family reunion.
Randy was always there. And then
Randy was there. I co-anchored with him for a while, too.
That's right. I think you went through Barry's a van, Barry Finn, Sally Patrick.
Exactly.
Dennis Felkin.
Oh my gosh, you've got such a good memory.
Sunny House.
Yes. Which he did not want to change his name. I felt so sorry for him. He did not want to change his name, but it was during that time frame when it was like, oh, this will be great. You'll be Sunny House. Steve Wollenhouse
is
his
name.
Can you imagine
that? You work your whole life and they're like, nope, you're going to be Sunny. And I remember the quotations in the tagline.
No, but you remember it. I suppose that was the point, but yeah, I felt for him. But no, it was great. It was great. I had a wonderful time. The only thing I struggled with was the content quite often because I am, I was going to say Pollyanna, but I do kind of question sometimes how much negativity, you know, that we can put into the world without causing problems. And, you know, news tends to focus on the negative.
Well, and one of the best parts about CARE at the time was CARE was very involved in the community. They came in, they said we're going to be what WCCO Radio was, a community TV station.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play another clip for you. This is from 1986.
And Lynn Boulder of St. Paul, $25. Right now we're going over to the fishbowl, our friends Kevin and Joan.
Thank you, Barry. 340-1111. Please give us a call. Joan, I said earlier that I like Paul Ho's story. It did. Thank you. I guess that's the thing to be said for that, because I think that showed more than anything else the effects of MD on people.
To be honest, that's exactly what I've been saying to everybody. When I went out to do that story, I had no idea of the devastation of that disease, and it's devastation that it's incredible because it's something that we can do something about. There are people out there who are working on a cure. I know that it's out there. If we can only call in 340-1111, send us anything that you have. If you've been out there and watching this and enjoying this and you haven't picked up your phone, I don't think there's any excuse. I think you want to pick up that phone right now. Give us a call, 340-1111. Do it for the kids out there who are like Paul Hook.
Don't call the number now, because that was a few years ago.
I think I was trying to use my high register there. Maybe
that's in the IDS Center, and this is the
MD
Telethon with Stuart A. Lindman in 1986.
Wow. I mean, I've done a lot of the MD Telethons. Mm-hmm. I co-hosted with Majors a few times. I also did the Cerebral Palsy Telethons, too, so those are long nights.
Well, as a matter of fact.
Uh-oh.
I don't use fabrics.
Live from the Plaza Hotel in downtown Minneapolis, this is the Weekend with the Stars Telethon for United Cerebral Palsy.
Good evening, I'm Kevin McDowell.
And I'm Joan Steffen.
And we're coming to you for the 1986 United Cerebral Palsy Telethon live from the Minneapolis Plaza Hotel in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping you have a lot of stamina because we are going to be here for 19 and a half hours.
Okay.
Things are turning out a little slow at the moment. These guys have lots of time to order pizza and stuff like that. But believe me, by the time 5, 6 o'clock rolls around tomorrow night, it's going to be lots of people, lots of activity.
Hopefully, lots of money for you.
You remember? Yeah. I deliver.
Oh my gosh, that is funny. Those were long days, but you know, it was also fun. A lot of fun in television comes when you don't have a script, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, or when things kind of go wrong, you know, and that logically lots of things would go wrong when you didn't have a script and you were live for 24 hours.
So I want to point out about JonesStephan.com. It's a great website if you want to know what Joan's doing now, and I want to talk a little bit about a couple more of your stages, and then I want to talk about your book, because I'm reading Joan's website, and Joan has kind of divided her life into stages. Stage one, stage two, stage three. And stage one and two is about, stage one is about TV and at Care 11. So what made you decide to leave the anchor desk after 17 years?
Yeah, it was... The amazing thing is, I think I had a hint that this was going to happen the first day I was on the job up in Duluth, mm-hmm, because I was sent over to a fatal fire my first day on the job, mm-hmm, and I'm a very emotional person, mm-hmm, and it hit me in the heart, mm-hmm, immediately, and I thought, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can do that part of the job, mm-hmm, and eventually, I think that part got to me.
Sure.
I mean, I tried to be present with my heart and try, mm-hmm, to be encouraging and try to do a lot of things that were more upbeat than not. But eventually, you just live in that stew long enough, mm-hmm, and it gets to you. So, Tom just brought me a box of Kleenex. I'm good. But it does get to you, and I think that the media has a tremendous responsibility to balance our coverage that we receive, because a lot of us, if you watch the news, you assume that is the reality,
right.
And it's just such a very small portion of reality out there. So I had to leave. I had to find something more upbeat where I could laugh more.
Well, especially in that period of time. What we understand about the world was through TV and newspaper, and probably more so TV than even newspaper at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, if you're dedicated to one station, which most families are, mm-hmm, you have one or two spots a night, and that's what your whole context or your whole idea of what the world is from, mm-hmm, those 2.5 hours.
Right.
So it's all blood and... Mm-hmm. I was talking to some people, and I remember I used to love the slides, you know, the little artistic fire.
And
you know, they would do these... horrific fire slides. So you're talking about a fire,
right?
To the illustration someone had drawn of a house on fire,
right?
Or the murder one,
yeah.
Or and it's just that's what you think of your world and where mm-hmm, you live. And you look at some of the statistics, sometimes get in the way of a good story. And you look at, you know, violence rates or you know, take your pick of your, and the statistics don't always match to what the coverage, the media. Has mm-hmm, a particular event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before 9/11, you know what the big story was? With shark attacks.
Oh, really?
The shark attacks and arsenic in the water. Those were the two big news stories prior to 9/11.
Huh.
And then 9/11 happened, we were obviously talking about a lot heavier things, but mm-hmm, it's just, I always find it interesting that how the media sometimes sets the agenda for what's on our mind and what we talk about in the morning at work or with our, mm-hmm, friends,
mm-hmm,
and then until something else more interesting comes along.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the news basically purports to be holding up a mirror to people's worlds, and mm-hmm, it's distorted. But they're not only holding up a mirror to a very small percentage. And then even if, I always say, if you're going out to cover a tornado, say, mm-hmm, for Channel 11 or any channel. So you've got that horrific event that's a very small portion of reality for a very small portion of the people. Mm-hmm. But then you take it even finer and you find the worst destruction that you could possibly find that came from that tornado.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sliver it down even more to an even worse situation. And then you hold that up and say, this is your world. And then people start reacting like that and start living their lives like, ooh, maybe my world is something to be afraid of, or maybe I should, mm-hmm, be afraid of that person, or maybe I should be afraid of my, you know, to me, there was just too much fear for me to be a part of it.
Can I ask who decides that kind of thing? Because I can't, mm-hmm, imagine the news anchors themselves going out to these horrible, atrocious scenes,
mm-hmm,
and just being excited to be there and have this story. Like talking to our own Stan Turner, he was telling me, just he went to so many murder scenes,
yeah,
saw so many bodies. It really got to him.
Yeah.
And it starts weighing down on your soul.
It does. And it does. I mean, I can't imagine you wanting to have that.
No. Who is this media person that represents all these things? Encourages
who, I mean, who makes those decisions? Yeah. It would be, at first thing that I want to say is competition will make that decision for you. It isn't necessarily a person, but it's the idea that somebody else will have it, and we need to have it first, and we need to have it the biggest and the boldest and all that. And then if you go inside the newsroom, there would be a certain direction that would come from management. There would be another direction that would come from the news director, and then the day-to-day, moment-to-moment decisions comes from somebody named the assignment editor, who is just manning the phones and listening to police scanners. And we may go out and cover a story that came across a police scanner that wasn't necessarily a big story that meant anything to you, but it just happened to be the only thing that happened that day. So that gets the magnifying glass that day. So that gets to a person after a while.
I believe it.
There's not a police scanner for kindness. You know, I wish there was, but the police just talks about, you know, the scanner just squawks about fires and burglaries and things like that.
But decorating scents.
Yes. We did not use a police scanner at all on decorating scents.
11 years decorating scents.
Yeah. Well, it's still on, I guess, occasionally.
How many episodes?
About 400.
That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. We did. Yeah. It was. And I was told by Steve Adelman, who was the guy who was the producer on that, I was told that, this is just going to be a hobby. This will last maybe 13 weeks. Don't worry about it. And, 10 years later, I was the one who quit. So.
Well, the best part is now all these demonstrations and decorating scents are still relevant. You go out of YouTube and you go online. And I was watching some last night to prep for our day-to-day, and I was watching you do the clock on the wall, and that's one of the...
I've got 400 episodes. Clock on the wall?
Let's see. It was a mechanical clock you're putting onto a wall, and
then painting the numbers onto the walls. So, yes. There's great ideas, and I think we need them now more than ever, because it's all about reduce, reuse, recycle, dumpster dive, making our landfills less full and saving money. So.
We are a throwaway society, and like we were talking about earlier in the program, there's so much that we toss away, and then the challenge is then a week later we wish we hadn't done it, and then we keep things we shouldn't have anyway.
I'm trying to think what decorating scents would have done with all of those kinescopes lying in the East River.
Scrape them for silver.
We could have done something.
We're doing a remote this summer, actually, from the river. We're going to do a scuba dive. ideas for the station.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Let's talk about the next stage now. You're out of TV. And
I am.
What is the Joan Does Now? I went to the site, and your goal right now is positive, being positive, being nice to one another. Tell me a little bit about this.
My goal right now is to encourage everybody to know that they have the capacity to change the world. Peace. I formed a nonprofit called Peace Begins With Me. And as I look back at my life, I've probably been searching for peace my whole life, trying to find peace with myself and peace with how the world operates and peace with, do I really matter? And all those questions. I've been a deep, wide thinker for most of my life, I guess. And the conclusion that I came to, you think about even television news, it served a purpose in this. It allowed me to, it was all about distilling information, distilled, take 5 hours and turn it into a minute and 10 seconds and have it have meaning and all that. And when I started to distill the concept of peace down to its most basic possibility, it begins inside each human being. You can't point fingers and get peace. You can't say, I'll be peaceful when you stop doing that. I'll be peaceful when the Mideast has peace. I'll be peaceful when... It's like... It doesn't happen that way. So my peace organization is inviting people to be kinder to themselves, to know that they are valuable, that they are powerful, and then to use that power for good. Watch the energy that you bring into relationships and into rooms and into Target stores. And we're asking people to be nice to each other and to themselves.
And Joan Steffen is an author. Your first book, And She Sparkled. Tell me a little bit about, is this a biographical book? I admit I have not read the book yet.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm leaving.
I know she's leaving right now.
Her arms are up in a huff.
I was actually going to, maybe, bring a couple copies and we could kind of review them here, but we'll do that next time.
Okay.
But tell me, is it a biographical book?
Yeah. It's my life story. Okay. It's told as a metaphor, though.
Okay.
It looks like a children's book, but I always say it's a children's book for grown-ups. And I wrote it for myself. I never thought it would be published as a book. I just wrote it to try to make sense out of my life, why I felt like there was something missing when the world had told me again and again that I had success, and success didn't fill the gap.
So if someone's expecting the big gossip behind the closed doors of Channel 11, this is not the book for you. But if you want to know about Joan's life and really where you've come to be, this is a great read.
Yeah, and it's at the beautiful bookstore down the way.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then your next book has been Peace In, Peace Out, which was published last year.
It just came out in September of 2012. And it's, as you said, Peace In, Peace Out. And it's just, it's half little suggestions on how to recover who you are, mm-hmm. love who you are, honor who you are, and little suggestions on how to just move that out into the world. I mean, from the simplest of suggestions to when you watch the news, watch it with a purpose. If you're going to watch the news, mm-hmm. watch it with a purpose. Don't watch it with this idea like, oh my gosh, now I'm filled with all these horrible fears. Watch it with the idea that you offer kindness, even a kind thought, to the people who are being profiled in the news. Watch it knowing that you have the power to affect. And I'm just a big believer that we're all connected. And so if you see pain, your responsibility is to offer a kind thought, at the very least. My question is, what's the least you can do? And then do that. Start there.
Because we all have an answer with the least we can do. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. Let's take a break. We'll be back with our guest, Joan Stethund, on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here with my guest, Joan Stethund. We're just watching some video from a few years ago.
Yeah, of Cora Ann Mihalik from her last WTCN newscast. I don't know. There are so many names that you were bringing up that I had forgotten.
Joan's going to get her on-air kiss. Yep, there she gets her on-air kiss here in this video we're watching. Sorry. If you're at home, you can type in Cora Ann Mihalik's last newscast and watch this tender moment here on video.
I think I might have been pregnant at that time too, so oh my goodness, I had so many, there I got my kiss. I had so many issues when I was pregnant because I put on 60 pounds with my first pregnancy, and they always say that television puts on 10 pounds. I think when you're pregnant, you put on 60 pounds. It's more like 120 pounds.
And thankfully, they have that desk, and then things...
It wasn't enough. I needed a larger desk.
Hey, you've always been beautiful to me. So
thank you.
One thing I really like, and you mentioned this on your website, and it's also online, mm-hmm. is your something to think about promos. I want to just play a little bit of this, and I want to talk about this.
Okay.
My suggestion to you today is to grow up in a small town. And I know it's too late for most of you, but how about this? How about if you just act as if you grew up in a small town? And to me, that means acting as if that person you run into on the street or in the store, you are going to see them again. They might even be related. You have a responsibility to them. And if we take that small town care with one another, we might just become a community. Something to think about. Remember that boomerang you tried throwing as a kid? It would never come back. It just kept going. Well, life is nothing like that. Life is like the boomerangs in the cartoons we watched as kids. They'd throw it, it'd come right back to bop the character on the head. What I'm saying here is that quite often, what you send out in life is what you get back. With apologies to Forrest Gump, life is like a boomerang. What are you throwing out today? It's something to think about.
I love those.
I love those, too. That's great.
We did 40 of them. It was my husband and I did that on our own. It wasn't a Care 11 thing. Mm-hmm. We footed the bill for it. We did the editing. And then Care 11 was kind enough to air them twice a day for about a year and a half. But so my husband and I did it for our kids. We wanted them to know what was important to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I love that. I got more response from that than almost anything else I ever did on Care 11. Because, I mean, people would come from across a drugstore and hug me and say, thank you so much for putting that on the air. And I thought, maybe that's why I'm here at Care 11, you know?
Do you still, I imagine, people will see you, you're in line or you're talking to someone like, didn't you used to be Joan Stephan?
Right. It's usually the voice, though. Mm-hmm. It's usually the voice, which probably means I've changed an awful lot, but let's just assume I haven't. But no, most people recognize my voice.
Do you enjoy that? Do you enjoy the when people?
I love people. Yeah. I love people. And mostly when people talk to me in person, it's about nice things. If they want to be mean, they write a letter.
Well, that's right.
And that's just the way it is in television or media or anything.
You were there in the era where there was no emails to flash a comment about, but you got the letters and the phone calls.
I remember, terrible.
Let's go back to my 12-year-old world here. And someone asked you, do you get a lot of fan mail? And you said, well, I get a lot of mail and things don't go right. And you mentioned that there was people very angry when you and another female would be co-anchoring the news together, because that's just not how it goes. You not have two females anchoring the news.
Or they'd call in and they'd be angry about a color that I wore. Like, I wore a hot pink.
You've got to be kidding.
No. It's crazy. I wore a hot pink suit jacket one night, and on this particular person's television, it came off as orange because her television wasn't, you know,
sure, it's kinda
tint wasn't accurate. But she called in and was livid because I had worn orange on St. Patrick's Day, and you know, it was just, and I was called Satan by a woman because I didn't see the Virgin Mary in a cinnamon bun. That was part of our like a before we go kind of a moment.
Well,
and
she's totally right.
Yeah, I know. Well, there is that satanic influence apparently. Yeah, it's crazy. Or people would get upset that I was holding a pen, which I had to hold to make notes because someone was in my ear telling me things. They would get angry about the craziest things. But I'm so glad I'm not part of the email era. I don't know that I could survive. I was just talking to Elizabeth Reese about that the other day, and it's crazy what people will write over and over and over again.
So occasionally, so my website, if you Google like WCCO or Care 11, my site luckily will pop up as one of the, as an archive site, and people who are very angry occasionally don't always like do things carefully, so they'll write an email off to me thinking that I'm the Channel 4 website, and I save these because they're very. I gotta be out there. Humorous to me,
yeah.
And
if you're not the person they're talking about,
it's right?
Totally humorous.
I find it humor either way, but like I can't believe you this and that, and it's just there's a lot of intensity and anger in the audience.
Pat Miles once pulled me aside because I'd taken a hit a few times. They always used to publish these around the newsroom, so you'd see what the people were saying
you.
And she said, you got to think of them as voices from the insane asylum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You got to make some of these email related something to think about. Do it again, update it.
Yeah. So okay, I have a story here I want to play, and I want you to promise me not to get too sad. And this is a tough one.
Okay.
Now let's listen to this one.
A famous American beef eater is finding herself asking, where's the job tonight? Clara Peller, who brought fame to herself and Wendy's hamburgers with her Where's the Beef ads, lost her job yesterday after she did an ad for a Campbell's product. And today, Clara says that move has her steamed.
I did the Prego commercial because they didn't want any more commercials at Wendy's. And Wendy's told me I could do it. I made some money, which is nice for an older person.
Oh, Clara Peller.
And Wendy says when Clara did an ad for Prego spaghetti sauce insinuating that she had found the beef, it ruined her Wendy's image.
Well, there you go. This is a tough one.
It is a hard one.
Clara.
I loved Clara. No, she was a pretty cute. She was a pretty cute little actress.
That's a defining of an era right there to have a Clara Peller commercial spot in the news.
Exactly. No, that was great. Thank you. I can't believe all the little minutia that you've been able to dig up.
It's
kind of like the Inside the Actor's Studio guy, right?
Well, you know, it's fun, and when you see like yourself, and you see you're every Saturday, you expect SNL, and then Joan Stephan, you know, right before then. So it's tough when you go away and we don't see you for a long time.
It was hard that decision to leave.
And they got you to come back for a while.
They did.
How'd they convince you to come back?
They said you only have to work for 3 hours on Sunday night, and they paid me. And then I thought, okay, I can do it. It was just time for me to have my weekends back, and it was time for me to to honor, you know, for lack of a better word, my soul. My soul was saying that that isn't where my, where I was supposed to be. I was supposed to be doing something else.
But even if you're doing TV on Sunday night, you're still thinking about that day.
All day long.
Exactly. I mean, mm-hmm. when I do this for an hour,
mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, it's a...
Yeah. Radio is a tough job, I think, because, and I've had a couple of offers to do radio over the years, mm-hmm. and I couldn't do it because it's all the time. You're always a vacuum cleaner looking for this bit of minutia that you could put on the air or this funny story and writing it down. And you have to really be really hyper aware of stuff all the time and reading for a purpose instead of just reading for fun.
It sounds easy.
It does, but it's not easy to do well. And you do it well.
Well, I appreciate that. Mm. The website, JoanStephan.com, your organization is called again?
Peace Begins With Me, and it's peacebeginswithme.org.
And this is a nonprofit.
It is a nonprofit, yep, because, all we're doing is creating the simplest campaign. And right now, the simplest campaign that we've come up with is called the Hero Card. And
mm-hmm.
It's just a little card. I kind of call it the kindness currency, where if you see somebody being kind, if you see somebody with a smile, if you see somebody just being kind to somebody else, it's a card that says you are a hero in this world that can feel really disconnected. Maybe it was a smile, maybe it was a connected conversation, but that's heroism in my book. It's not how hard you can hit a baseball. It's not how high you can climb a mountain. It's how you move through your life. And, you know, being, as a friend of mine said, being an adder to life instead of a subtractor.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody can look at their moment to moment, their life, and say, okay, was I adding to something there? I hope so. Was I subtracting? I hope not.
What's next for you?
Somebody asked me the other day if I'll retire, and it's like my job right now is to offer kindness and to be kind. I don't think I'm going to retire from that.
Well,
I think I'm just going to keep doing. I'm just going to keep going and seeing what doors open, because that's how my life has worked so far. I'm kind of like Forrest Gump.
Can you see yourself retired on a rocking chair with a glass of lemonade? Can you see yourself doing that?
Give me a grandchild, maybe I'll talk about it.
Okay.
But I don't know. I used to think I was lazy, but I am pretty introspective, so I could spend a lot of time thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But my great joy lately has been to go out and to speak publicly. And I used to dread that. And now I go out and I give speeches. I was just out in California and gave one, and, Chicago, and around here I've been doing quite a bit of speaking. And there's just great joy in me for that, just because I'm talking about things that matter to me.
What kind of organizations are a fit for you?
Let's see. The last, I did something for the Lucy Hobbs Project, which is kind of a women in leadership, mm-hmm. Within the dental industry thing. That was out in California. Gustavus Adolphus College.
Sure.
I just did an event for, I'm doing something at St. Thomas. I'm doing something at St. Kate's this summer. I'm a little bit all over, but and I just did a church, Bethany Christian School.
Oh, sure.
This week. So I'm just, Anybody who wants to kind of feel recharged, hopefully, is who I would want to talk to.
I think a lot of people need that, and I think that this is a great message that I think that we need to hear that more often.
I think so too.
We need to say it to each other.
We hear the opposite regularly, so why not try to balance it?
And
out?
It's awkward to hear that the positive side of it.
Yeah,
at first.
Yeah. The world is good.
My guest, Joan Stephan. Joan, thank you so much for being on.
That was my joy. Thank you.
I hope we'll have you back again sometime soon.
Awesome. Now that I know where you are.
That's right. That's right. This is Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond will be back next week with Johnny Canton of WLTE. We'll be in next Saturday. Till then, we'll see you later.